All right, friends, welcome back to another episode of the Build Show podcast. That's right. This is my weekly time to get together with you guys and go deep. I don't have enough time on those YouTube videos to get into all the nitty gritty, but on the podcast, we got time. You're driving to work. You're driving to job sites. You got 30 or 45 minutes with me today, and I got a really special guest talking about a topic that I've been really mulling over personally a lot. We're going to be talking today about possible recession and what we do as builders, as contractors, as architects, or even as landlords or homeowners to prepare ourselves with what could happen in the future. I also have a very special guest, an expert in both real estate and investing in finance, my buddy Meet Kevin with me today from the Build Show Rockwool Studios here in Austin, Texas. Let's get going. Kevin, you're so awesome to come join me today, brother.
You're so awesome for allowing me to come here after your rental project.
All right, so let me introduce who you are first. So Kevin is a fellow YouTuber. Meet Kevin has absolutely blown up in the couple of years I've known you, Kevin. He's just shy of 2 million, probably by the time you watch these, 2 million subscribers on YouTube. He's also active on other platforms. So YouTube's probably your biggest, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I first got to know you, Kevin, as a real estate investor, as a landlord, as someone who really was smart about real estate in general. But you've really done an amazing job on your channel of branching out into personal finance, stocks, investing. You even ran for the governor of California. I followed that whole campaign. I'm sorry you didn't win. We would have loved to have you in besides Gavin Newsom in office in California. But you're based out of LA, and the way that we met is when I first started my personal remodel project, which now has turned into my own house. I said I was going to do a rental, and that first video I published, something like, I think I titled, I'm going to remodel this crappy 70s house. You at the time were at like 200,000 or 300,000 subs. You published a video like, Matt's an idiot. Why are you doing this? You know, and turns out I was an idiot. So you were in fact quite right that I couldn't remodel this house for 40 grand. But then we met up personally not too long after that, right? What's your side of the story?
Yeah, I mean, you nailed it. I mean, you were really nice about what you said to me, about me. But yeah, I mean, kind of you became an object of a little mini series of tearing apart Matt's home and moving bathrooms or whatever. and then you ended up demoing the whole house because you were making it your own, which is totally different and okay. But even after all that, you were so nice, you still invited me to catch up with you in Vegas. So I was really honored about that. Fun. And then here we are again. So thank you.
I appreciate you coming.
So that was really cool.
So you're in town for the Gigafactory big party, the cyber rodeo, as Elon's calling it. But, you know, we had a chance to shoot a video at my house today. And one of the things I asked you about is the reason why we're at this podcast. You know, the last couple of weeks, I've really been thinking, our real estate market in Austin, which is the only market I know or understand, has been so frothy and so feels to me so overinflated that it feels like a throwback to 06, 07 time period where things were so hot and prices were appreciating so rapidly that certainly a correction needs or maybe will happen. And I've been in the business since 95. Another recession happened in the early 90s, right before I got into the business. And I heard tons about it, even though I didn't experience it. But I was one of those guys who got caught up in the last recession. 95 to kind of 07. We had a little dip with the tech downturn. But I'd really only seen growth during that time. So here I was, this bullish builder, and I got caught with my pants down big time during the last recession. I had to pay back a little over $300,000 in debt. It took me many years to do. It was, there were many times that I was on my knees saying, God, I need to pay my bills. Will you drop some manna from heaven? And God did that for me. And I was able to not declare bankruptcy and I paid every penny off that I owed. But since then, I've been incredibly cautious about not doing spec houses, not buying cars on credit, not running up my credit cards, paying cash for things, having a real budget. Talk to me about what you're seeing in the marketplace. And then I also want to get into some nitty gritty about what advice you might have for people, whether it's their own house, whether they're landlords, whether they're builders and remodelers that are maybe doing projects That's kind of my hope on this podcast. Yeah. We can go a little deep on this topic.
We can do that. Yeah, so I guess we'll start macro. So zoom out and look at the market overall. What's fascinating is you never know with certainty. So we're always trying to look for those red flags. And the Federal Reserve last told us that the housing market was in a period of excess starting in 2001 to 2007. But that was an incredible period of run-up. I mean, you wouldn't have wanted to not be in the real estate market between 01 and 07 because it was phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that excess became ridiculous, obviously, by 07 and you know, dead people were getting loans and teachers were getting $4 million homes, ninja loans, no income, no job, no assets. So we have a very different real estate setup this time where even though the Federal Reserve just last week came out and said we have again entered a period of real estate excess, which is a big red flag when the Fed says real estate is now starting to become a bubble. That's Probably. A big problem.
Yeah.
But again, the last time they said that, that kept going for 6 years, right?
Interesting.
But that was driven by loose lending, very, very loose lending and lending that became even looser.
And we don't have loose lending anymore.
We
right?
don't. We don't have loose lending anymore. You know, things always loosen a little bit after the crazy tightness of a recession. But now with the Dodd-Frank Act that was passed after the recession, people have to have the ability to repay their loan to get a conventional loan and not get ripped off with like a 10% interest rate or something like that. So your average borrower today, 770 credit score. They have the ability to repay. So wealthier people are buying homes and poor individuals are not because they're priced out of the market. And I still think homeownership is a phenomenal way to build wealth.
100%.
But the issue now is interest rates. They drive purchasing power. Mm-hmm. And when interest rates go up, they can affect purchasing power by a factor of 10. So if interest rates go up 1%, you could see about a 10% reduction in purchasing power. And we just came from this insane market that's just been running where interest rates went all the way down to about 2.6, 2.7%.
So crazy low.
It's ridiculous. It's free money is what it is.
Yeah.
And in the future, I think we'll be back to that. I mean, you think 2.6 is low. Then you go look at Germany, you know, 3 years ago. It's like, wow, well, your mortgage rates are 1.49%.
What?
Yeah. It's because they have negative growth rates, right? In many cases. It's insane. So I'm like, can people borrow money in Germany and lend it to me? You know, we Seriously. Arbitrage that. Well, that's cheap money. But anyway, so now we've seen rates just in the last, you know, this is the beginning of April here. So we've seen rates go up in the last 3.5 months from 2.6% to about now 4.7%. So we've seen at least that 2% move.
Yeah.
We're probably going to see at least another 1 to 1.5% thereafter.
Meaning 40% of the market might be out because we've gone up 3 or 4%.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we move, let's say 3% and we remove 30% purchasing power for the market, that doesn't necessarily mean prices come down 30%, but what it does mean is purchasing power goes down 30%. And if we have, let's say, excess demand right now, which we do because there's not enough supply of 20%. So there are 20% more home buyers than there are sellers. Well, now it makes sense. Prices go up. More demand, less supply, prices go up. So now if you lose 30% of your purchasing power, but you still have that 20% excess demand, maybe you see like a 10% hit to real estate. And that's sort of being called the potential soft landing for real estate, which is like we kind of get, you know, the brakes get applied. We slow down a little bit. You know, maybe you have one negative year. Okay, it's like minus 5%, minus 10%.
But there's no fire sale.
No fire sale. It's no 08 again, right? The only way that really flips, and a lot, certainly in the real estate industry, no real estate agent wants to hear it, but I mean, some do, but there's this belief that, oh, don't worry, purchasing power won't go down because cash buyers will keep coming in, or, oh, well, there are not enough listings anyway. But here's the thing. Right now, the people who are buying homes are buying homes based on what people were paying for them 45 to 60 days ago. Those are our comparable sales, right?
Sure.
So if we're here in April and somebody bought a home in March and February, we're like, oh, well, the value of that house is $750K. That one sold for $750. Well, I'm paying $750. That sounds fair. I'm not getting ripped off. Buyers don't adjust that by the interest rate. They're just looking at the recent comps, right? So even the buyers today are still buying because they're like, well, I better get in now before rates go up more. So now you've got a lot of the real estate community saying, oh, well, I mean, rates are already up 2% and people are still buying. sure, the people who have already been pre-approved and are like anxious to get in, they're still buying. What happens when that class of buyers goes away?
Right. Or now slows down greatly.
Yeah, exactly. Now the next group of buyers come in. They get pre-approved. Wait a minute, I can't afford 750 anymore. I can only afford 600 or 650, right? At the same time that happens, and houses start sitting on the market a little bit longer, you're going to start seeing the Fox News, the CNBC, the CNN, the Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. Oh, no, houses are starting to sit on the market. You know, numbers are starting to fall. That's potentially when you get this tipping point where fear comes into play. Uh-huh. And this is where sellers go, oh, crap, I've been meaning to sell. I better do it this summer before prices are down next year. And so now that potential 20% excess demand could become excess fear. You could have, let's say, 5% excess fear. And yeah, you could see prices come down substantially more because now you're adding that excess fear to reduce purchasing power. Right. So,
and now all of a sudden that 750 house gets in the market or ends up, you know, selling at a discount for 725, let's say, or 710. Oh, yeah. And you see a little bit of a rollback.
And when you see that trend begin, your cash buyers don't like buying anymore. Mm-hmm. And this is what folks forget is people love buying houses cash when the market's going up.
Not when the market's going down.
Exactly. People are really trend sensitive, but real estate is very slow. Mm-hmm. So this is where now I think a lot of folks who are buying are sort of a little bit more placated by, well, I mean, things are still getting multiple offers, so it's fine. It's, I don't know, you've got to wait 3 months. So this is where we get into, I think, your other questions of, well, what should people do if they had a personal or rental property? And then, of course, their personal finances. But I don't know. What other questions do you have before I keep rambling?
No, I like, I think the specific application is what I'm looking for. I think people listening to this have seen the news, maybe have these same feelings. Now, every market's different though, right? I mean, Austin, where I am in Texas, is a little bit of a bubble. You're here for the Cyber Factor opening. Mm. I just heard in the news that last year Tesla hired 50 high school students right out of high school with good paying factory jobs.
Nice.
I mean, this is like the Cinderella of marketplaces.
Yeah.
But like my parents back in Pittsburgh, PA, a tech-focused town now, formerly a steel town, you know, they're not experiencing the same 500 people a day moving there like we are in Austin. And so I suspect that their real estate market will be very soft much sooner than Austin's might be.
Yeah.
Or friends that I have that are in Cleveland or in other places that aren't as tech heavy, aren't as hot, maybe even L.A., frankly. We've had a lot of Californians that have moved to Texas. Mm. I suspect L.A. is probably not in a growth mode right this second.
No, the population's been somewhat sideways. And in fact, you're actually seeing a lot of migration out of California. It's a little bit of everyone. You've got middle class, upper class. People are leaving California. The people who are staying are those who are willing to pay that extra tax and the extra housing prices or whatever for weather, family, and maybe proximity to whatever entertainment they like or the beach, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, in terms of cost of living and opportunity, I absolutely think Austin is a better place.
Yeah.
Politically, opportunity-wise, everything, right?
Yeah.
I would love to live in Austin. Mm-hmm. I'm jealous. I
would love to have
here.
You, man. Come on down.
Thank
anytime.
You. So I'm tired of the politics in California. You know, they say they want to build more houses. They can't get anything done over there. It's bad.
It's crazy.
So yeah, I think that gets to with this thing that you mentioned sort of is that maybe would Austin potentially be insulated? Of course, I think that's a possibility. There is, though, also this widening gap that we've had between home prices and actual rents. Mm-hmm. And so another thing that could happen is home prices could actually soften in theory 20% and rents could go up 5%.
Wow.
Because people move from buying to renting. Exactly. So
yeah.
So you have a higher percentage then of renters. Rents have substantially lagged. I mean, I think rents nationally have gone up maybe year over year, at least by the latest metrics for the nation, somewhere around 5%, while nationwide prices have gone up 20%. So you've seen this 4X kind of difference there.
Yeah.
You know, here in your market, I don't know the stats. It might be more like rents have gone up 15% and prices have gone up 30, 40%, right?
Sure.
Because y'all have blown up. But you could see a little bit more of that kind of where things kind of come together,
mm-hmm.
where prices come down a little bit and rents go up. So that could happen.
So then what do we do with our personal finances and our business finances in this climate, right? What are the moves to make in this time?
So what I like to do is I look to start with personal residence. I think everybody should really hold their personal residence dear to them, because one of the beautiful things about taxation in America is you can build wealth in your personal residence. And in the future, you know, if you're 90 years old and let's say you bought a house for $200,000, that's now $5 million, let's say, right? And you've paid this off. And let's say you were to sell it at 90 years old. Well, the government would ask you for about taxes on $5 million, which, you know, could be somewhere around $1 million, about 20% in long-term capital gains. Well, if let's say now you're 90 and you walked outside and get hit by a bus, and you weren't here anymore. And then the next day, your children said, we're going to sell dad's house for $5 million. They would pay zero in taxes. And that's because of the stepped up tax basis. So the real generational wealth, which is also a big cause of disparity, racial disparities in wealth, like between blacks and whites, is home ownership because of that generational wealth that could be passed down with massive tax benefits. So really selling is usually a horrible idea in real estate. And I'm going to talk about circumstances where it does make sense to sell because I'm selling some properties. But usually selling sucks because here's the thing. If your primary residence, now you lose that tax potential. You do have some exemptions for your personal residence, 250K single, 500K married to not pay taxes on those sorts of gains. But usually the mistake is twofold. One, you pay selling fees to sell. That's not in theory a mistake, but you're going to pay probably 5% of commissions, 1 to 1.5% for escrow and title, and maybe another 1 to 1.5% for repairs. You know, fix it up a little bit, spruce it up, stage it, credits during escrow, whatever.
That can add up.
Yeah, it probably adds up to about 8%. And so if somebody's worried about a 10% decline in real estate prices and then they take a guaranteed 8% axe because they of the selling costs, then, you know, what have you really saved? You haven't really saved anything. So for most folks, I would say personal residence, selling a personal residence is a bad idea.
Hold.
Yeah. I do think that another big mistake folks make is they'll get afraid, they'll sell, and they'll sit on the cash. And it's very normal when you have cash in your bank account, you feel richer.
You feel good.
You feel good. You know, you spend a little bit more at dinner. You get that wine bottle when usually you'd pregame. And now you're getting that wine bottle at dinner and you're paying $100 extra or whatever, right? And so I think for most people shouldn't have money. Everything should be invested, whether that's in stocks or their homes. I don't even think emergency funds beyond like money that you need to pay bills should exist because most people will save, oh, I'm going to save 20% for my home or whatever for a down payment. And then they buy vacations with it or a new car and it all gets blown. It always gets blown. My dad sold a property. He couldn't afford living in California. And so what I ended up doing is now he lives in a home that I own. So he doesn't have to pay. He lives there for free. But when he sold, what I did is I said, Dad, if you have $200,000 that he got from selling in your bank account, you will blow it all within the next 3 months. And he spends money like crazy. I mean, he would have bought 5 motorcycles. I mean, it would be gone. So I actually asked him to, and I didn't need it, but I asked him to lend me the money. So we put a note against my house, like a second note, and he lent me the money. And so now I pay him monthly. And we just made it for, I think, 10 years or something. So now it's kind of like he's getting, in addition to his Social Security, he's almost getting an annuity. Exactly.
Cool.
This monthly installment.
But
and he's not blowing all his wealth.
That's really smart. Yeah. Good for you.
So, okay, so that's a personal side. Probably, like, generally not thinking, you know, oh, let's bail out of our personal residence or whatever. Maybe what you do is while home values are higher, it's probably a little too late to refinance because rates have gone up, and I don't want people to lose low rates that they've probably already got at this point. Consider getting a home equity line of credit. And this is like a credit card on your home. You shouldn't use it, but you should have it. And so let's say if you had a $600,000 home with a $300,000 loan, you'd be able to probably take out about, let's see, take you down to a 40, you'd probably take out about a $180,000 home equity line of credit.
Wow.
And the cool thing about those is anytime you want to spend that money, you could just write a check to yourself. And then you only pay interest when you actually draw the money down.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're not paying interest on it. And so you open this up with a local credit union. Maybe it costs you $100 a year or whatever. Totally worth doing. Do it while the appraisal values are high so you could get a bigger line of credit.
Smart.
And I don't want people to think they should get these if they think they're going to end up buying a boat or, you know, a new car or like things that they shouldn't buy. Things that are going to go down in value. We call it guns versus butter. you know, buy guns, like things that are going to go up in value, not butter, right? But the reason I recommend the home equity line is if the real estate market does slow, I don't think we're going to see the 08, but say prices came down 10% and there was fear in the market or whatever, that's your time to take that home equity line of credit and go buy a rental property. Buy a deal. Yeah, be one of the bottom feeders. Smart. So prepare yourself for those investing opportunities.
And do that now while you've got that opportunity. Now, let's take the other instance, which I suspect a lot of our listeners are like you. I don't own any rental property anymore. I had some and I nearly lost my shirt on it. In '08, I sold it in, you know, fire sale kind of fashion to keep my eyeballs above water. But let's say you own 1 to 5 or 10 rentals. What would you say to those people in this market?
So generally, I'm very, very opposed to selling. But I am selling, I'm definitely selling about 20 out of 26 of our properties.
Wow.
But that's because I have, so what I'm going to be doing is I'm going to be taking all of our personal assets and our personal income. And we were going to do this anyway, whether the market was going to shift or not. Maybe not necessarily sell yet, but I'll come back to that. I want to say the goal first, because that's going to make more sense. We're going to move our assets into a C corp, which I know is crazy because it's double taxation and this, but it actually works out really well for us because, see, every year with my income, I'm giving about 55% to the government. That's because of California and the Fed combined and the Obama tax, everything combined. I'm giving more money away in taxes.
Then you get to keep.
Then I get to keep. So our thesis is, well, let's put all of our assets into sort of like our own mini Berkshire Hathaway.
Your own little fund.
Exactly. And now I'm paying taxes at 21%, assuming, I mean, that's not even considering the fact that you could probably get deductions to bring that effective rate lower, 18% or whatever. And now I have the choice as to when to actually pay the second tax. And that could be after I retire, when my tax base is going to be a lot lower. And so I'm going to be paying a lot less in taxes. And now this company is a company that I could give shares to my children to or family to or whatever.
Smart.
So that's very complicated. So I want to, like, before making it seem like, oh, Kevin's selling like 90% of his real estate, I don't want people to think that, like, I'm just doing that because I'm going to sit on the cash, right? It is going to this purpose. Now, I have accelerated that transition because of the way I think the market will shift. And I'd rather take advantage of the prices that I can get now on selling my rentals, because I'm going to make this transition anyway, than wait 6 months.
Yep.
So what I've been doing is I've actually been offering my tenants money to cancel their leases because they have contracts. So they're in place and they're great tenants. Everybody pays on time. Everybody's great. So probably paying on average of somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000 to say, hey, look, your lease won't be getting renewed. So you're going to be moving at the end of your lease anyway, right?
Hey, why don't you move now?
Well, if you move now, we pay for it and then you get some extra, right?
How
because
about that?
What's your move going to cost? $7,000 or whatever, if that, and now you got an extra, you know, $10,000, $13,000, whatever.
And then you can put it on the market immediately.
Exactly. And then I put it on the market while they're still in the process of moving out.
And rates are still relatively decent.
Yeah, historically. Or people are still looking at those comps, right?
Yeah, 3 months smart. Ago.
Yeah. So that's an anxiety that I have now. I think it's very stressful to sell real estate. And I mean, look, it's real estate. I mean, I still am a real estate broker. I just don't take clients anymore because now it's YouTube. That's my client. Yeah. But boy, I mean, we're like just selling our stuff has kept us so busy. It's a distraction. It's terrible. Yeah. And then we're going to have to pay taxes on this, right? Yep. So I don't advocate really trying to dump and run, but it might make sense to do some this is probably what I would have done had I not done this corp idea. I probably would have done more refinancing. In February, I did 3 refinances on the properties I thought I was going to keep. Now it's a little bit more expensive. And that actually makes me nervous about the market too. See, in February, I asked for a refinance and they're like, sure, you know, 0 points, 4.625 was the rate. I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, just give me the money basically, right? Now I'm like, okay, I want to refinance this. They're like, okay, well, now it's 5.5% and you're going to pay 3 points.
Holy cow. That's a huge change in a short period of time.
What? So the investor loans have gotten a lot more expensive. And That's not great for investor purchasers, which you actually get a lot of out here in Texas as well. I think
for sure.
I think 100%. 1 in 4 of your sales is investors out
that
here.
Sounds right. I believe that.
It used to be 1 in 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
And if those 25% go back to 10%, let's say.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big hit on the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting to think about what you said about the cash buyers and those cash buyers maybe slowing down on doing cash buys because it's no longer favorable for them to use their cash in that that way. Let me switch gears, and I want to talk about what you might recommend for my business or similar businesses to mine that are remodelers, builders, really any small business when it comes to their business finances with this possible change in the marketplace. What would your advice be to me or to others like me?
Yeah, so the biggest factor that usually takes down any business or endeavor is debt. Mm-hmm. And you nailed that at the beginning, is now is the perfect time to, and I hate saying this, but like postpone that new Sprinter van, you know, postpone that even, and another one I hate saying, even maybe postpone that vacation, right? I hate saying that, but get your house in order first, your financial ship in order, because you'll have much more pain if you're in debt when things are ouchy and people are canceling jobs.
Big time.
And if you're in debt. So by far, margin debt would be the worst. Never have debt on stocks. Terrible idea. Debt on your real estate is not so bad if you have a good margin of safety in terms of equity. Or cash flow, you know, if you've got cash flowing rental properties. I'm not so worried about that kind of debt. I'm more worried about consumer debt, cars, student loans. And these are also things that are going to get in your way if the market does fall a little bit. If you want to be a buyer, you want to become an investor and you want to buy good deals, and you go to a bank and say, I want to get a loan. Well, how? If you have consumer debt, that's lowering what you can qualify for. So consumer debt, number one's got to go. Credit cards, student loans, you know, lines of credit for business lines of credit, very, very common. I would try to get these things flush with cash. I would be greedy in the sense of hoarding cash right now. Mm-hmm. Because right now, everybody has, it feels like outside the investing world and business world, it seems like a lot of people are spending like there's no tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like everybody's getting vacations, they're getting new cars, new bikes, boats, it's summer. Everybody's spending money like crazy. And that actually makes me nervous. It's when people start going too frivolous, that's when I start getting nervous that can't last, right? So reducing spending to get out of debt and building a larger cash buffer than previously had, huge. Delaying some of those bigger purchases that are going to absorb either your ability to get credit in the future for deals or going to hurt you in a way where, I mean, the last thing you want to do is like be in a situation where you have to let go of an employee, let's say, because you have too much debt. That's terrible. See, for me, I've told all my employees, especially our construction group for our rental remodels, they're not like your crew, but they're really awesome and I love them. But we do rental remodels.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. That's great.
So, but I told him, I go, look, I need all of y'all to know that I don't care if I have to pay you to do nothing. If like things slow down, I want you to know that the reason I'm selling like either certain stocks or properties now and paying off certain debts is to make sure that I can pay you in the event there is a rough period of time. Yeah. And so I think that preparation is really, really key. You know, payroll is another big thing that obviously sinks a lot of businesses, but you combine payroll with debt and a recession, it's not survivable.
Yeah, and ultimately cash flow is the lifeblood of any business, right? And builders, remodelers, those professionals in the construction industry need to make sure that their cash flow is in good shape and that they don't have buyers, for instance, that aren't going to have the money to pay their bills on a project. So, for instance, here's one thing that I do on all my jobs. I get a deposit from all of my people that's enough to cover more than 1 month of construction in the busiest month. So that I don't have a bunch of bills outstanding that then I can't pay, which either puts me under or puts my subcontractors under because they're not getting paid. Worst case scenario, I've got enough money in buffer reserve to pay everybody. And when that reserve starts getting low and doesn't get refilled, we stop construction.
We're
not going, and I'm doing mostly cost plus projects. And if it's a cash buyer, we're having them deposit that cash into a bank owned account, not their owner.
Like an escrow.
kind of like an escrow, but we both have, they have read only and I have signed privileges out of it. It's their money. But I'm making sure that they have those assets, not in, for instance, one of the things that got me caught up in the last recession, I had clients that had money in stocks or other investments.
Sure.
Those go down. All of a sudden they can't do their $500,000 remodel because the asset they thought that was worth $1 million is now worth $250,000 if a big recession happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. That's the big issue is if the real estate market starts slowing down, and this is just another warning, especially in your industry, if the real estate market starts slowing down, construction is going to fall, in my opinion.
For sure.
Home Depot will sell less products. Lowe's will sell less products. 100%. You know, the window manufacturers, everybody's going to sell less. Because, see, it's really fun remodeling homes when, like for homeowners and consumers, when prices are going up. Because it actually almost feels like this instant gratification. Yeah. Oh, we just redid the kitchen. Oh, well, look at that house that just sold for another 50 grand over there. And they also did their kitchen or 100%. Whatever. Right? So you can like mentally justify that spending, right? But if, you know, wow, that house just went down $50,000 and we just spent 50, you're like, oh no, but they also had a new kitchen.
100%.
That's going to hurt. So I really hope that the Federal Reserve can pull off what's being called this soft landing, where that would be no recession. I think interest rates they're going to go up between now and the middle of 2023.
Yep.
And then they sort of curve back down. If we can get that curve back down with limited damage to the real estate market, like, okay, prices fell 5% or whatever, but things are stable, or even they were flat, but it's okay. You know, interest rates then start coming down again. Okay, good. Back to the party.
And then maybe we get back to growth again.
Exactly. Yep.
So last question for you, and this is totally a personal question, because I'm trying to figure out what to do here. I've got a lot of my personal kind of retirement assets in a 401k from a previous home building company that I worked for that I haven't touched in years. It's really mainly in a home building stock. What do you think is going to happen with the stock market in general over the next 12 months? Should people that have a lot of stock assets like I do diversify into some safer, less volatile things? Or do you think if it dips a little, that's fine. It'll, you know, we'll continue with upward growth again in the future.
Well, I think first that if we have a recession, there will be almost no safety in stocks unless you're investing in like the volatility indices or taking some trader methods, right? I really think even, I mean, commodities, everything gets hit. Real estate, everything gets hit. Yeah, but those tend to be short term. Recessions don't tend to last too terribly long. So so usually there's nothing wrong with you know, holding through. The worst to do is selling when there's max fear, right? You know, if you're not in the market on a regular basis, and you prefer to focus on your business or real estate or whatever, but you do have money in like a 401k. Generally, I think the best thing you could do is like a VOO, like a Vanguard S&P 500 index fund, and forget about it. You could even do I call it a basket of index funds. And so you put like 25% in the Dow, 25% in the S&P, 25% in the NASDAQ 100, and then the Russell 2000 for small caps, you put the other 25%. Or you doink with that percentage, maybe 5% more in S&P and less in the other, whatever. But
that's what I've done for almost all my investments.
That I think
because I don't want to pay attention.
There you go, and you go with low fee that way. You want to get away from the high fee sort of mutual funds and that low fee, and just set it and almost forget it. Because really, what you're doing there is you're betting on America. You're betting on Train America.
Yeah,
and I would never want to bet against Train America.
Yeah,
I think that's
the most incredible economy probably in the world's history.
Oh, and I think we'll continue to be. I mean, they say, oh, China's going to get us. China, I believe personally right now, I believe they are in a recession, that we are getting.
There's no way they can get away with COVID zero without experiencing some amount of recession.
Well, not only that, but
I mean, they took what California did and multiplied it by 10.
Yeah,
I
mean,
20.
I mean, they're shutting down Shanghai now until what, April 18th or something. It's ridiculous, especially for Omicron. You know, we'll skip the whole COVID talk.
Yeah.
But you know, they also have the real estate crisis that they essentially promoted, you know, the Chinese government was, oh, we need more housing. So they built hundreds of thousands of housing units and housing stock so that they would have it available. And now you have ghost cities.
Yeah.
But you also have over leveraged real estate companies that are not able to make their debt payments.
Yeah.
So you do have a big asset bubble in China. Mm-hmm. Real estate prices have already collapsed some 30-40%.
Wow.
It's bad.
Holy
you have
cow.
The Chinese consumer, the average Chinese household is saving four times as much money this January as they did last January. And we're like, you know, getting out of the COVID world minus the Omicron, right? But the fact that they're saving four times as much, and if anything, COVID would be a similar factor. At best, we think it's better.
Yep.
Why are they saving four times as much? Because they know they're in a recession.
Yeah, they need to.
The Chinese government will not admit to that, though, because they want... See, right now, China has this opportunity, and they have to tread lightly with the whole Russia-Ukraine issue. Mm-hmm. But they want to be able to prove to the world that an authoritarian government is better than a democracy, right? And so anything that makes their country look bad is just not going to make it here in terms of news.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the same with Russia too. They're, you know, everything's fully controlled in the media in Russia.
Oh, yeah.
They're not watching. No Russians are watching anything that's from an outside source besides something that's controlled by the government,
which is
sad.
It's very sad.
Yeah. It's really sad. And ultimately, that's why my grandparents came to America. You know, post World War One, as you know, those European countries were in terrible shape during that time. You actually immigrated to America too, right?
Yeah,
you have German heritage like I do.
Yeah,
don't
that's
you?
Right. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
How long did you come over?
Well, I was 18 months old.
Oh, you were, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then I guess when we went back to Germany, they didn't stamp my visa on the way out, so technically I'm someone who overstayed their visa. Flags me every time.
Does
I come
it really?
Back. Yeah.
Oh man, yeah. I'm sorry.
I even married an American, and we made a joke once at customs. And they're like, "Why is the red light going on? I married her." And he looked at me like, "That's why you married her? Wait a minute."
Hold on.
Like, wait, no. I take that back.
I am a believer that America is a better country because of immigrants.
Yeah, of course.
And
they got to fix the immigration system.
I mean, that's a whole nother podcast.
It
but
is.
I see it firsthand here in Texas.
Yeah.
And it's something that didn't get fixed in the last administration and is certainly not getting fixed in this administration.
No.
I don't care whether you're Republican or Democrat. That's an issue that seems to be no one's able to fix.
No.
I'm not sure that I have the right answers either. But I come from a family of immigrants.
You know,
we
tried hiring somebody that's perfect to fit at our company, and they have the skill set, we have the relationship, and we wanted to sponsor them for a visa so they could work here. Unless they have some kind of special degree or some kind of special skill set that I can't find in America, nope. And so, you know, we're looking at it like this is ridiculous. Like here we are. We're willing to grow our economy by hiring somebody, by housing them and bringing them here. We have a relationship with them.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just say, well, they're replaceable. Just hire somebody else.
Yep.
It doesn't work. It's hard enough to hire people.
So hard right now, for sure. Kevin, so much appreciate you taking the time to come see me, man.
Pleasure.
Tell all these people how they can get a hold of more Meet Kevin content.
Thank you. Yeah, so I have a channel. It's Meet Kevin on YouTube. I'm also on Twitter. It's Real Meet Kevin there. Meet Kevin on Instagram. But the biggest source of information is Meet Kevin. That's where I cover sort of macroeconomics, whether it's the Federal Reserve or recession talk. But I'll also talk about investing in real estate, rental properties, stocks I like, what's going on in the stock market. So that's over at Meet Kevin.
Kevin, so good to see you, man. Really appreciate you coming to hang out with me here in the studio in Austin.
My pleasure.
Guys, go follow Kevin's, especially his YouTube page, because he's publishing content super often, and it's absolutely relevant to what's happening in the world, in your marketplace today. So that's where you need to go go over to YouTube and go to Meet Kevin. Now, if you're not currently a podcast either watcher or listener, we're available on all the major listening formats, but we also publish the video version of this where you can see Kevin and I on video over at thebuildshow.com or buildshownetwork.com. We're kind of migrating from Build Show Network to thebuildshow.com. Same site. And we're publishing every single Friday, guys. So hit that subscribe button below. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. Otherwise, we'll see you next time on thebuildshow.com.